Welcome to Sentence to Paragraph, a podcast on the space between wordcraft and the writer's life. I'm Darrellyn Evans, and I'm joined by my co-host, Molly Martin. Hey, Molly, how's it going?
Hey, Darrellyn. Doing well.
Good. We are going to talk about point of view today, but first let's check in. How was your writing week?
My writing week has been pretty exciting. I've got two pieces of writing news to share this week. The first is that my editor got back to me with a list of questions that was quite extensive and a very complimentary. He said that I had clean prose, that that my story was really easy for him to read. So.
Oh, yay! Well, we expected no less, of course, but...
See. Well, that just basically means that I'll have a cheaper proofreader, so that's
awesome.
Good.
Awesome. So exciting. So this was your big step a couple weeks ago, right? Was to, or was that even just last week? How the weeks fly by. That you gave this over to a copy editor. So
yeah.
Which an editor, anyway.
Yeah, content editor. So I'm going through right now. Content editor, and then once you know he finishes his work, then I'll get it back and I'll do some work of my own, and then I'll send it to a proofreader.
Oh, cool. So he already gave you a list of things. Is there still more reading he's doing, or what's the rest of that process look like?
Yeah, so his process is he did the reading first, and then he just sent me a big list of questions. So he hasn't actually suggested any revisions or anything for me to do yet. It was just he wanted to make sure that he understood some of the things about the book, and because it's a second book, he wanted to make sure that he understood it's the middle book of a trilogy. He's like, I know what happened before because I sent him a synopsis of the first book, but he's like, I also want to know what's going to happen in book three, basically, so I can make sure that, like, you know, plot lines are getting tied up and all of that kind of stuff.
Cool. Oh, wow. Yeah.
So I was excited about that. And then my second big piece of news, which shouldn't be as exciting or big as it is that I finished my short story.
Yay! So. That's super exciting. You've had some awesome numbers this week. So
I know. There was one day I was doing nano amounts of words. I was pretty proud of myself.
So exciting. Oh, you should be proud of that. That was really cool. So should be proud of every word, even the 11 that I got on. So right,
but you have consistency. I just have bursts. Like I have like days of nothing, and then you know a day where I'm like, oh, today I'll do 1,000 words. And I think you've got way more consistency and way more words.
Well, but remembering that they're all really smelly, stinky words at this point. It's just quantity, not quality. So. Well, you know, that brings up all of us are always like, oh, we're not doing the what the other guy is doing. And there's a real, like, well, there's something important about, for many people about writing every day. That's not how everybody creates. So, and that's not how it works for everybody's life either. So, those big creative bursts are great too.
Yeah.
So, yay.
Well, speaking of which, in your consistency, what is your writing week or weeks been like?
Well, it's been a pretty hairy week, work-wise and life-wise. And so the last couple nights I've only had just a couple of minutes to write. But I continue to write. I had started just a little writing exercise a couple of weeks ago that has blossomed into a novella at this point. It's promising to be a novella. It's really in that I don't typically just completely discovery write, but I am discovery writing this thing. So writing into the dark, as they say, which is very uncomfortable for me, but it has been kind of a fun exercise to see, like, each night, and this has been true from day one of this year. Every night I sit down and you're like, oh, this is the night I break my streak because I got nothing. But as soon as I start writing, stuff bubbles right up. And now I'm finding as like right before I sit down to write, I'll, you know, I'll look at whatever the last thing was that I wrote. And there are some stuff there, you know, like some idea will pop up. Although I have also started, you know, at the end, cause I'm only having these really short writing bursts at the moment for the most part. And, I'll start writing, and as I'm getting to the end of that piece, like I kind of already know what the next piece is, so or at least one possibility of what's next, so I'll write that down. And a few days that has saved my bacon, because then it's like, oh, okay, I can just pick up from there. But other days, right before I sit down, I'll have like, oh, I am going to come back to that thing I thought of last time, but here's this new piece. So
yeah,
so that's kind of fun. It's been fun, but I am heading into a week at the coast. We're doing the Fiction Fluency Coast Retreat with Eric Witchie this next week. I leave tomorrow, so I'm super excited because I'll have a week of very intense writing and then workshopping and whatnot in that. Really digging deep into the in the fiction fluency work that Eric teaches. This is an opportunity to really get immersed in that. So we have everyone who's coming has taken some of his workshops at some point or another. So it should be a pretty fun week.
Well, I'm very jealous of your week.
Yeah, this is the first time I have done one that is a completely full week as a writing retreat, and also this particular kind of method where we'll have a little bit of workshop and a little bit of writing time each day, and then a little bit of you know, like deep immersion in that in the craft part of it. So craft lessons, I should say. So it should be pretty good. I'm excited. And we'll be at Yahats, and it's going to be beautiful this week in Yahats, Oregon. So yeah, it's going to be 70 degrees at the coast and sunny. Like, how could we have done better at picking a week to be on the coast?
It sounds amazing.
Yeah. So should be fun. So I'll report back on that in 2 weeks.
I was going to say, when you come back all tanned and rested, but it's the Oregon coast, so you won't be tanned.
There'll be a little burn on my nose and eyes where, you know, the little bit that was uncovered. No, actually, it will be 70, so there might be a little bit of sunshine on my face. The tops of my feet. So, yeah. Ah, all right. Any other writing things before we jump in?
I think that was really it for this week, is just kind of focusing on getting that short story done and pushing ahead on the edits. So
awesome.
Unfortunately, now that I've finished my short story, my number of things that I can legitimately procrastinate on is down, and I may have to actually work on my novel. So.
Oh, man. Now, have you finished draft three, the third novel yet, or are you still drafting that?
I'm still drafting that. Okay. So I have an outline. Mostly I have an outline because my editor for book two asked me for an outline for book three. And I'm like, yes, I totally have that. And and an hour and a half later, indeed, it was true that I did.
Mm-hmm. Did that help illuminate some things for you with the book?
It did. And I think some of the things that it illuminated for me is there are a lot of things that I don't want to do with that book, and some of those are currently in my outline, but I think that actually helps because now I have something to judge my efforts against, so it'll help.
Oh good. You have, I know your first book was written into the dark. And the second one, I know you were struggling a little bit with it and talked about moving into actually outlining. And was that true of your short story? Did you outline that one? Was that the one we talked about?
Yes, the short story, I use a little bit of a different outline. So I'm kind of working on using two different structures because novels and short stories, as most of us already know, have different structures, but I don't know this because I don't like structure. So the short story structure is basically like you have a character with a problem and they try to solve the problem and they make the problem worse and then they do something and it either works or it doesn't and that's the end of the story. So that's the basic structure that I've been using for my short story, because what happens in my short story is it tries to become a novel at every opportunity. And I'm like, no, we've got one problem. That's it. We're only dealing with one problem. And my characters are like, but we have 12 other problems that we'd rather deal with. So keeping them on track has been a difficulty for me. But then with the novel, I have the same sort of tendency of, okay, well now I have 12 problems because it's a novel and I can have more problems. And my characters are like, but what if we had 70 problems instead? So yeah, just trying to keep, so structure, especially for the novel, seems like it's going to be really important for me to just make sure that I'm telling the main story and only the main story and all of kind of keeping everybody corralled, instead of letting them just wander off and do whatever they want, which is what they usually do anyways, which is how I got 130,000 word second book.
Oh my. Oh my. That's exciting.
It's huge. I'm wondering, and my editor was like, okay, here's the plot lines that I have picked up on, and I want you to prioritize those for me. And he didn't say whether or not he's going to ask me to cut any of those, but I'm thinking that's sort of what's next, which is probably the right call. Either that or I should just cut the thing in half.
Well, ooh, you could have a tetralogy?
a quadrology?
Quadrology. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Tetra. Yeah. So getting back to outlining, what part did outline play in that story and how did that work for you?
So book two has been a really interesting hybrid between not outlining and outlining. So there's basically there's basically four plot lines happening in book two. Mm-hmm. Which is Marys has one, John has one, Torres has one, and Miranda has one. So, and originally Miranda wasn't in book two, and now she is. So the first three characters who were in book two, I wrote their stories without a lot of outlining. And Miranda's, I decided to actually try to use some structure and do some outlining. So I've gotten her storyline is basically... it's the first act, and then book three will actually be her act two and act three. And so her story as structure begins in book two and then finishes in book three. The story is kind of complete in book one. Like there is a complete story, but the overall story, it will be completed in book three. So that's where the structure part comes in. And then book three, what I've started looking at it is, okay, well, I know what's happening in Miranda's story because the structure is carrying over from book two. But now I have to kind of backtrack it and figure out what everybody else's story is, like how they need to wrap up and what parts of story structure have already been hit in book two and what still needs to be resolved in book three. So...
And how's that going for you? I'm just trying to say, is it feeling helpful or to step out and look at it that way? Or is it something that on your next trilogy you're going to look at sooner? Or
I think it definitely would have been easier if I had started out with this in mind, because it's having that structure from book two for book three with Miranda makes her sections a lot easier to write because I already know where it's going and what needs to be there. And everybody else is just kind of running crazy. So
that'll be fun to see.
Yeah. Yeah. So something's going to happen. It's going to surprise somebody, mostly me.
Oh, well, that'll be the no surprise for the writer, no surprise for the reader, right?
Hopefully. Yeah, yeah.
In a good way. Awesome. All right. Well, since you were just talking about these four point of view characters, maybe that's a good segue to get into our topic for today, which is point of view. Do you want to kick us off?
So I'll talk a little bit about my story and some of the fun that I've had with point of view of my characters. And because I'm shamelessly going to plug my own stuff here.
Oh, please do. Because it's so good.
It is. It's amazing. I can't believe everybody hasn't read it yet. So in the first book, there's basically three point of view characters. And the way that the book is structured, if it can be said to be structured, is that there's an overall story that's happening, but not all of the characters are privy to the entire story at the same time. And I had tried to write this book in several different ways. I had first started as a first-person point of view with only one character, and then I quickly realized that there was a lot of information that I wanted the reader to have that I didn't want that character to have. So then I tried to do it as a sort of omniscient thing so that I could just have kind of writerly asides of, you know, here's what's going on in the world, and the narrator inserts themselves into the story and tells the reader this is what's happening so they could have the context that they needed. And I didn't like the way that was working either. So then I switched to multiple first person points of view. And then when it got published, it got my, my publisher wanted me to switch it to multiple third person points of view just to be a little bit more consistent and to help readers figure out whose point of view that they were in, because each chapter is in a different character's point of view. So it's been a lot of experimenting with different points of view, and trying to make sure that each character's voice is consistently their own, but it's also consistently the voice of the book. So the thing that I found with point of view, with switching point of view characters in that story, is it does serve the purpose that I want in the story, which is to give the reader information that the characters don't have. Because it's a thriller, the reader is usually a step ahead of the characters, instead of it being a mystery where the reader's a step behind them. Yeah, so that's the way that point of view works in my book. And one of the things that I've noticed in editing other people's books, a lot of times that I think new writers are working with multiple point of views tend to be switching point of views within either the same chapter or with sometimes within the same scene. And so since I'm switching point of views, I have to be very careful that the reader can understand when those point of views, when the point of view character switches. And for me, what I do is I never switch point of view within the same chapter. It's always like in each chapter, it's only the point of view of that character. So the big caution that I have for other writers is to make sure when you're switching point of views, if you have multiple point of view characters, to really like give your reader a lot of cues that's happening, because even with readers who are pretty well understanding that every chapter is going to be from a different point of view, from a different character's perspective, they still sometimes are like, oh, I thought this was, you know, John and not Marius, and now it's actually Marius and I was confused.
It seems like one of the easiest ways when you're working with multi-point of view book is to have either the chapter break or definitely a scene break to move into that other point of view, which makes it nice and clean.
Yeah.
And what are some of the ways that you cue readers in so that they know, oh, I am over here in Marius versus John?
So, yeah.
who's the other guy?
So one of the things that I try to do, and this kind of gets into a little bit of world building, is to try to figure out what's important to each of those characters. And then when you're focusing on those chapters, to write about what they would notice. So for example, sometimes it can be really, really fun to take my combat inexperienced character, which is Marius, who's kind of the bumbling civilian of the group, and throw him into a combat situation if I want the reader to sort of have this frenetic pace and feel overwhelmed. So then I'll give that scene from Marius' point of view, because he's the civilian in the story as well, and he's overwhelmed and he doesn't understand what's going on. And then other times, let's say, for example, if the choreography of the scene is really important for the reader to be able to follow along, you know, here's these really cool maneuvers that are happening and there's a lot of intricate tactics that are taking place. Well, then I would tell that scene from John's perspective. perspective because he's the seasoned military person who can look at it from a distanced view and say, you know, well, according to standard Army doctrine, we're doing a pincer maneuver that has to do with a flanking thing and, you know, Overwatch positions and jargon.
Yes.
But he can explain it in such a way to the reader that the reader feels like, oh, I also understand what's going on, or at least I understand what the stakes are. Like, I understand what the objective is, whereas Marius is sort of, you know, I'm the little twig that's bobbing along in the flood and I have no idea what's going on.
So we hear a lot. I love that you're talking about this because that helps us see, like, choosing your point of view character helps us get the right information that we need or the right feel that we need. But there's also like who has the most to gain or lose is one of the ways that we hear, you know, like how do you choose the point of view character in a particular scene? And it's, you know, kind of like whose scene is it? Who has the most to gain or lose? But I also like that this helps us see information that, you know, or get information in a way that we need it as readers. As well, so that, you know, as you're saying, getting the tactical view of the scene versus feeling overwhelmed and frenetic. And I guess that, how do you choose which of those aspects that you want at any given time?
I think a little bit of, you know, what do I want the reader to feel from this? And then also, like you said, who's the character that has the most to gain or lose from the scene? Like, who is going to have the biggest emotional impact? And sometimes you can also take that and say, okay, this scene is actually going to be way more like, I have a scene where, I don't think this is too spoilery, but I have a scene where, Miranda's father gets killed and yeah, nobody's surprised. But it's not from her point of view, even though she is the character that is most impacted by it happening, because I don't want her, she's not able to process it in that moment. And her later scenes, like there's a lot of other stuff that's going on and she's sort of numb and she's sort of forced to move on anyways. So I don't want the reader to be with her in that moment. I want the reader to have to wait and then to connect with her later, because I feel like the anticipation, because now they have, it's almost like a little cliffhanger, like an emotional cliffhanger, because they know she's going to be really devastated by this, but I don't get to experience it with her until I get to the next chapter that's her chapter. So there's a little withholding of the love there.
Well, and you probably don't want 52 scenes of her reacting and grieving and or not grieving, as it were, and going through that. If you just get the two or three key moments with her, then we'll see her development and get something from someone else's point of view. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So you talked about having your your editor had requested this change, like how you originally wrote book one in first person. Was it all in first person, or did it have some first, some third?
It was all in first person. And my editor had asked me to change it for a couple different reasons. One being that the voices just aren't distinct enough to make it worthwhile. Like, I am not a good enough writer that I write each character distinctly enough that it was sort of noticeable to the reader when the points of view change. So then it was just all I, but all the I's were fairly similar. And then the other issue was that sort of industry standards, like
third person,
that's a consideration as well. So, you know, we like to think that we're all beautiful and and artistic and unique, but there's also an industry that has certain standards and readers that you want to be able to read your book.
Yes. go ahead.
I was going to say, I think you write the first draft for yourself. And that's what I did, is I wrote the first draft for myself. And I'm like, this is the book that I love. And then when you write subsequent drafts, when you do your revisions, it's not that, you know, you're betraying your vision or anything like that, but you're sort of stepping back and letting more people into the room and getting a different consensus of, you know, okay, I get this story, but does everybody else?
Right. One of the things I faced with my last book, pardon me, I had 4 point of view characters in that book. And I was, I tried a couple of different things. I was trying to be super artsy with it. So 2 of the characters were in just simple past tense, third person point of view, past tense. One person was in third person point of view, present tense, because I wanted her to feel very immediate. And also she was kind of a naive in the moment character. And I wanted to just have the reader experience that along with her. And then the 4th character, who only came in just a little bit, I had her be in present tense. Mm. And so it was really interesting to see the reactions of my writing group at the time. And they just, it would be so funny because they would just hate as soon as I got to the present tense characters. They just hated it. And then when it was first person, they really struggled with it. So it was interesting to do that as an experiment and see what worked for people and what didn't. But I thought I had read a book, I think that it was Finnish. I read it in English, but someone had kind of done something like that where they had the characters, part of it was that they were all in different like points of view, so present or past tense or first person, third person. So, and it was a fun experiment, but it is really hard to train your reader. And not everybody is going to accept that. So understanding that industry standard thing is good. And I did end up putting it in all into third person past tense, again, for that consistency. Although one of the next things I ran into is that I, had such close third person, trying to really be immersed in everyone's point of view that there wasn't kind of that narrative layer in between the reader and that close third. And so their voices were so distinctly different that there was one character who was 15 turning 16 in the book, and so that read very much like a YA novel, and then there were a couple other people, and so it was very dislocating to have it. So you do actually have this extra layer to point of view when you have multiple characters that it has to feel, even though they are different and need to have a different point of view, you know, are really feel really distinct as characters. How do you navigate having that that sense of distinct characters and voice when you're in a particular character's point of view, and at the same time having that narrative voice that keeps the whole novel consistent so it isn't a completely different novel? And one was like you know, the YA, and then one is a very kind of brash and ballsy and having fun with life, and then one is kind of this, you know, very literary French, everything sucks in life. So trying to have all 3 of those characters inhabit the same world, it's a challenge. And I'm going to turn that over to you. I have some thoughts on that, of course, because I had to dial it back. But yeah. What do you see as an editor as you're reading folks' things?
Well, so my advice to other people as an editor is probably different from the advice that I give myself as a writer. So I'll give you my writer advice first, which is just write whatever the F you want. And
all right.
And go for it. Because here's the thing. If you don't love your first draft, you're never going to finish your first draft. So you can never do anything with it at that point. So yeah. So just write it any way you want, any way that makes sense to you. But as an editor, I will say, one of the things that I ask new writers when I first start working with them is, who's your target market for this? Like, who do you expect to read this book? And there is not, like, if I were to put together a Venn diagram of people who enjoy YA novels and people who enjoy French nihilism, I don't think that there's a lot of overlap between those people. That's probably a very small readership if you're trying to appeal to both of those different demographics. So as an editor, that's where I would say, you know, where is this novel trying to go to? Whose bookshelf do you want to be on? And unfortunately, again, you know, it's not necessarily that the industry is corrupting our art, I think, but it is forcing us to refine it with an eye towards it's going to be consumed by another human being and not just me.
This kind of reminds me of the meme that's going around right now where, you know, that the one end of the painting is a beautiful, like completely perfect sketch of a horse and, you know, like looks very realistic and beautiful. And then as it gets to the end, it's very cartoony. And
it's like a stick drawing at the end of it.
That's kind of what happened. Except it wasn't that it petered out at the end. It's just that it was like completely different styles stuck together.
Yeah.
So, and at a certain point, you do have to put a stake in the sand. But going back to that, I guess that kind of bigger thing, like thinking about point of view, that there is the character's point of view, but then there is the narrator or the narrative voice. And what are your thoughts on how you, like how you create that and what, you know, what level of distance does the narrative voice, you know, that kind of buffer with the point of view character and being in their head and then having this consistent voice throughout with all of your different point of view characters. Like how do you create that?
Hmm.
Or what are some techniques there?
So that's been a really interesting process for me because I had to switch everything over from that close, you know, that first person point of view, everybody's in first person, to third person. And third person, I still am in third person close, but third person also does allow me to do more narration. It gives me those a little bit more distance and a little bit more space to kind of comment on things, and to insert my own judgments into the story as the narrator, or to just tell people facts, like this is what the room looks like, instead of having the character experience the room and the reader get it through their experience. And one of the things that I found when I was switching everything over from first person to third person is I lost a lot of the character's distinctive voice because it wasn't so much in their head, but I also gained the perspective of being able to tell, you know, to just give the reader information. And so, which kind of brings me back to that old show, don't tell, piece of advice, which I think is a terrible piece of advice because it needs to be caveated with show some things, but tell other things.
Mm-hmm.
I think is a much better piece of advice because we get so wrapped up in the idea that, well, I've got to show everything. And you don't have to show everything. You don't have to show all the mundane details. You don't have to show 900 repetitions of the same routine. You don't have to show all the travel time. There are a lot of things that you don't need to show that you can tell. And I think that piece of advice is overly simplistic, and it pushes writers into giving a lot of detail about things that don't matter. So in first person, I was doing a lot more showing, but I was also giving the reader details about things that didn't matter. And what I found is that people who in my critique group who had read the first draft would sometimes get tied up on really, really minor details because the character would talk about those minor details because for that character, their experience included those details, which were insignificant to the story. So switching it over to third person allowed me to get rid of some of the extraneous information that was going to give, you know, to signal my readers in the wrong direction and get them looking for things that weren't important to the story. But I also feel like having that narrator voice made it a smoother read because there was more consistency, at least in the narration portion of my voice. My narrator voice was the same throughout, even though it was from different characters' points of view. I will lob the question back to you in a slightly different way of if you, as a person who occasionally structures things, probably more often than not structures things, so as part of your planning and structuring and plotting, you know, how do you decide what point of view to use? Do you sit down and think like this has to be first person and here's why, or do you just start writing and you're like, oh, this is first person?
A little bit for me. Usually, I do structure like second. I do a little bit of discovery writing. A character will come to me or a particular situation, and I'll write around a little bit in that until I kind of have a character, and I can hear their voice. And so, and mostly I will go with the voice they come to me in. And mostly for me, it is a third person voice, a third person point of view, and a third, and then it will depend on how close or how much narrative distance, but, it's always hard because so much of that is intuitive, but then I'll go back and look at it a little bit, you know, a little bit further into the process and see like how, you know, once I get past that first blush of the fun part and have to really start thinking about where is this going and imposing the structure and thinking about the story, then I can play with, you know, how closer or how distant will the narration feel. And that will depend a little bit on what kind of story is this? Is this a, you know, like, is this a naive character who really doesn't understand what's, you know, or who's just kind of experiencing what's happening to them and they don't have that opportunity, you know, they're not in the moment reflecting on what's happening, or they don't have that vast, you know, background of therapy to go, oh, this is what's happening in this moment. And, you know, and making those connections to personal and or historical things. I might put that in first person, and I might put that in present tense because I want, or I want that to feel super immediate. So I would do some of those kinds of things. But mostly I work in third person, and I've just kind of resigned myself to past tense. And it is a little bit genre specific. There's a lot of present tense, unless it is in, you know, certain genres really accept the present tense and certain genres do not. And since I'm mostly writing the literary, they do not like the present tense unless it's experimental and cool. You either have to be super successful at it or it doesn't work and it's not literary enough. One of those. But then thinking about, let's see, part of that question is also like who gets this, the scene and whatnot. Lately I've been, so the last novel had four, I was actually originally modeling it on, a Barbara Kingsolver's book, that I've forgotten the name of, Prodigal Summer. And which has three point of view characters, but they never walk on stage together. Mm-hmm. And originally I had planned the novel that way, although my characters started walking on stage together a lot sooner. And so they were very distinct. So even though there were three point of view characters, their scene, it was always clear whose scene it was because they were kind of going through their own story. And eventually they do walk on stage. Well, they walked on stage a lot sooner than and Barbara Kingsolver's, which they never do. Once they did, it was still really clear who, you know, that when they were walking on stage, it was always coming out of one particular person's journey. And so where they touched each other. And so, but it was always fun when they are walking on stage to like get a completely different perspective of how that person is thinking about themselves or how they see themselves. So, I did try to be really conscious of, what new and different information are we going to learn about the other character who is not the point of view character in that scene, but that will help give a little bit of depth and context to who they are and how the world sees them versus how they see themselves. So that part was interesting, but it was always really clear. That part for me, it was always easy and clear to see whose point of view it should be in, just because of the way that particular story is being told. But I think, you know, in other stories, it needs to be, as you had already said, like who has the most to gain from this scene or who learns something really interesting or who, you know, who, I guess this does go back to what you were saying about, like, do we put it in John's point of view because we need that military perspective? And sometimes the person who needs to learn something is the audience, of course. So that might be the reason to put it in there, in that point of view. There's a lot of people have talked about this. Kathy Day is probably the person who's talked the best about it. That the opening of Downton Abbey is really fascinating because we get it. We're following this letter through the first 15 minutes and we don't know what's happened, but everybody in the scene knows what's happened. But in particular, we're following Daisy, who is the new young housemaid. And so because she's brand new to that, to service, and she doesn't know the house and whatnot, people are explaining stuff to her. And because we're in her point of view, she doesn't know the stuff, they're explaining stuff to her, and therefore they're, you know, she's kind of serving as our audience person. And that allows them to explain a bunch of stuff they wouldn't otherwise be talking about. And we would just have to know as the audience. So that's a really great way to do that, is to think about who's the person who stands in the best for the audience. Mm-hmm. And having, you know, the naive character or somebody who's the outsider character who is new to town and people have to explain how things work is helpful, because then it's a sneaky way to be able to do all of that world building and tell the audience the things that you need. So
yeah. I was going to mention one. I love Barbara Kingsolver, and I think her Prodigal Summer and The Poisonwood Bible are two, like, if you're playing around with point of view, those are great novels where somebody has done it well, and uses multiple point of views in the same story in a really, really interesting way. And also, she does different tenses in Poisonwood Bible. I can't remember because it's been a couple years since I read Prodigal Summer, but she also switches, because Poisonwood Bible is kind of a frame story as well. So there's some past, it's in the past, but it's told in present tense, but it's clear that it's a remembered present tense. Mm-hmm. Because there's also some looking back and saying, like, the character will experience something, and then they kind of, it's almost like breaking the fourth wall, where they kind of will say, not directly to the audience, but they'll sort of have this revelation of, you know, well, that's what I thought then, but this is, you know, in that Wonder Years sort of way of, like, they're kind of commenting on the experience that they're having in the moment. So it's really interesting, an interesting way to do it. But if you're not Barbara Kingsolver, which we aren't, you probably can't get away with that quite yet. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, those are amazing books to study for that, which is why I use those models. just in talking about that, you had asked earlier, and I kind of got off track, like, picking what tense and what point of view character, and I was talking about, like, for a naive character, we might pick present tense or definitely first person, but if it's distance remembering, there's some real beauty in the first person distance remembering narrator who can, you know, that, and that is typically, and it may have a present tense frame story, but it's definitely usually told in past tense. But the beauty of that is that you get both perspectives of the narrator who can look back and say, oh, back when I was 20 or 10 or whatever, but also we'll get the story mostly through that 10 or 20 year old's perspective, but then the distance remembering narrator, who is older and wiser, can give some context that in the moment that 20-year-old wouldn't know. And so that's one of the beauties about third person is, or that distance remembering narrator, that don't know where that went, is that you do get both of those perspectives in there. So it's nice.
Well, and you also kind of have the character counterpointing themselves. If you have an older character who's reminiscing about their younger self. So you can say, you know, here's what I was like, you know, 20 years ago, and here's what I'm like now. And it's the same character. And they're also going to have either a lot of grace for themselves or a lot of judgment. So you kind of figure out which way they've gone through the years and then who's right. So was it their young hopeful self that was right and, you know, hope triumphs and love will prevail? Or is it their, you know, crotchety older self that was right and, you know, the world is a dreadful place and
we're all going to end up alone. And maybe, they, you know.
We're all sadder and wiser. Hopefully wiser.
So. One of the things that I will, I'm going to jump ahead to our editing tip of the day while I'm thinking of it, and it has to do with point of view, is, and we touched on this a little bit, but it's very, very important to not switch point of view in the middle of your scene. And I think we had said it, but I'll be really explicit about it as an editor, because I read a lot, especially with newer writers, where the scene will start out in, you know, Julie's point of view, and that it will end up in Ted's. And usually what will happen is Julie will take an action and she will consider something, and we're getting what's going on in Julie's head. And then Ted will take an action and then we'll be in Ted's head. And it gets especially confusing if there's more than two characters. But it can be equally confusing if there are two characters, especially if they are the same gender characters, because then we're, and it's in third person, because then when you say she thought or he felt, you don't know who you're talking about. So as an editor, don't switch in the middle of a scene. Just don't. Preferably don't switch in the middle of a chapter, but occasionally people will make really, really strong arguments about, well, this one scene really needs to be from so-and-so's perspective. If you do find yourself writing a chapter and most of the chapter is from Julie's perspective, but you really, really want this scene to be from Ted's perspective, consider, could the whole chapter be from Ted's perspective instead of switching in the middle of the chapter? And try writing it both ways and see which one works. Try writing it from Julie's without Ted, and then try writing it from Ted's without Julie and see which one works. Because I 99% of the time, one or the other of those will work better than doing a combination where you're trying to do both points of view in the same chapter. It's just, it's too confusing.
It is very confusing to read those. I have read a few in life. William Trevor's The Person Who Comes to Mind, Teresa's Wedding, where he has, I think, six point of view characters in one scene or something like that. And he gets away with it because he's William Trevor. But yeah, otherwise it can be very jarring to be jumping heads, head hopping, unless you've really, really carefully mastered that omniscient point of view to be able to dip in and out. So,
One of the ways you'll know that you're head hopping is if characters start to, if a character, let's say I'm going to keep on Julie and Ted. If Ted starts describing Julie, even though the scene has started out from Julie's point of view. So for example, one of the things that I see for some reason, eyes, this one crops up a lot, is so-and-so's eyes. If something happens and Julie's eyes look a certain way, but we're in Julie's perspective, she has no idea what her eyes look like, so she can't describe them to the reader. So just consider, from the movie perspective, just consider your point of view is like your camera. And if my point of view is my eyes, and you as the reader are looking through my eyes, I can't then tell you what my eyes look like, because that's what we're using to look out of.
Good tip. Keeping your camera in mind. And it's really easy. We see that a lot. It'll be really subtle where it'll just slip out for a minute and have this deeper perspective of like, here's what someone else feels or sees in the room, or it's the character seeing something about themselves or feeling something that would just be really weird and impossible, or understanding something out of context and time all of a sudden. It slips in. It's really tricky because all of a sudden you'll move from that, you know, and paying attention to the consistency of your point of view character where if it's a really super close third and then suddenly it steps back and we can see a bigger perspective of the room or, something about the character themselves, but also just like, it slips out of time all of a sudden. Of course, you'd be really sorry about this later when such and such happens, but in the moment, blah, blah. And that's actually a slip of point of view too. Unless that is your point of view, you know, the narrative device that you've been using the whole time. So it's very tricky. point of view is very tricky, especially that difference between staying in a character's point of view and how close or distance, and the narrative voice between the character and the reader. So really understanding and mastering those is super tricky.
Yeah. So, you know, look for characters who are experiencing things on behalf of other people as well. So a lot of times this happens when one character is happy, but the story says, like, and everybody was happy. Well, just because you're happy doesn't mean that everybody else is happy. So you have characters who are speaking for the emotions of other characters, and that's a point of view slip.
Yeah. Yeah, they can see everyone smiling, or hear the laughter or the sadness or whatever, but they can't just know that everybody is happy, right?
Yeah, and unless you have already established that your character is telepathic, and then you're okay, you can do whatever you want.
Well, sci-fi fantasy is a whole different thing, right? But then again, thinking about point of view in those cases. So, all right. Any last tips? What are you off to go do this week, writing-wise?
Writing-wise, I think I'm actually going to kind of buckle down and work on my novel. So,
very exciting. What things, what steps will you take, or what process will you do to immerse yourself back in so that you can hit the ground running?
I'm rereading the last few chapters of each characters as their chapters come up. I'm rereading their last chapters in book two so that I know where did I leave them in book two, and then I can pick it up in book three.
Sounds good.
Then the other thing that I'm doing is writing out the individual structures for each book, kind of doing a synopsis for each book so that I have timelines and emotional arcs and character developments for each books individually, and then doing an overall, what is the whole mess of it?
Sounds very exciting. That's like my favorite work on a novel right there. I wish I could be there with you.
I wish you could do it for me.
Oh. Well, we've talked about flying somewhere into the middle of the country and having a weekend, so we'll do that sometime.
You should, but in the meantime, enjoy your week on the coast.
Thank you. It should be pretty exciting. So, all right. Well, it's been great talking to you, Molly. And thanks for listening, everyone. We want to give a shout out to our intern, Nicole Ritson, who puts our, she does all of the editing on the podcast and makes them beautiful and puts them up online. So thank you to Nicole. And this has been Sentence to Paragraph. We'll see you next time. Take care.
Bye.